I actually was planning to go back into Romans this morning, and there's been some events in the last couple weeks that actually just triggered what I felt was a need to change gears. There are a whole lot of things that are happening in our world, and it's not just in our culture. It's in the church. In fact, just recently, how many of you read the book, I Kissed Dating Goodbye? I didn't read it, but I heard a lot about it. How many of you bought what he had to say? I'm not asking you to raise your hands, but how many of you have heard what just transpired with him? He just left his wife. He decided that he's walking away from his faith. There's another author recently, and I can't remember his name, that has done the very same thing, and just recently became, he got in the news. He actually hasn't, this author hasn't walked away from his faith. He's thinking about it. And in all of that, then we have all this other stuff that's happening within the church. Not just within the Anabaptist community, but in the church as a whole. There is all the moral breakdown that is happening. And I just really, I wrestle with this because it's a fact of life. Some of these things are a fact of life, and it doesn't make them right. But how do we as a church respond to it? You know, I'm not really rattled by Joshua Harris's walking away from his faith as much as I am concerned about the fact that we read these books, we follow these people, and we put a lot of confidence in what they have to say, and then this happens. So how do we guard ourselves against that? The problem is that every one of us has a part of us that wants to be somebody. We want to be something. And as I thought of that, there's actually going to be two parts to this message. I wasn't really sure. This schedule kind of worked out that I will be planning to preach next Sunday. And so what's interesting is as I was putting this message together, God put two parts into it. We have been talking about, as a church, we've been talking about accountability and how that looks and how that can transpire. And I believe that there are some things that as people of God, that if we're really serious about who we are, we're really serious about our faith, that there are some things we will do to guard that. And this morning I want to look at the first part of that, and it's the cost of integrity. Who can describe what integrity is? Or who wants to describe what integrity is? Let me start with a story. In the middle of an interview for acceptance to a prestigious Ivy League school back east, the interview asked his sure-of-himself candidate, "If no one would ever find out and no one got hurt, would you lie for $1 million?" The young man thought for a moment and said, "If no one found out and no one was hurt, sure, I think I would." The interview then asked, "Would you lie for a dime?" The young man shot back, "No way, what kind of man do you think I am?" The interviewer responded, "I've already determined that. I'm just trying to determine your price." You see, in our culture, it has become normal to lie. It has become normal to cheat, as long as nobody is hurt. It doesn't really matter if a president cheats on his wife, as long as it's his own private affair. Doesn't matter. And yet it does. It has nothing to do with how he's going to be a president. And I will argue with that one. It does have to do, if I'm going to cheat on my wife, it does have to do with how I'm going to conduct the rest of my life. Period. I have a person that works for me that I have kept a tight rein on because, you know, and I wrestle with this because I should fire him because I can't trust him. But at the same time, he does what I need him to do, but he left his wife and he was living with another woman, and he went to his wife and said, I want a divorce. And she said, if you want a divorce, you're going to get it yourself. And as far as I know, they're still not divorced, but they're not living together. But I will stand on that the things that I do in my personal life will affect the things that I do in all of life. And it doesn't matter who you are. We are bombarded with this idea that it is wrong to judge people based on their actions. And I'm sorry, but I disagree with that. Because if my actions show you something that is different than what I tell you I am, you don't have to judge me. I've already done it. I don't need to be there. In 2016, there was an article in the state newspaper, and some of these notes that I have are from another message that I preached. But in 2016, there was a young man that was playing for University of South Carolina, and he had been taking gifts from somebody who was a something. I don't know what he was. James, you know what he was. A what? A booster. I guess, if you say so. But he was doing something that he wasn't supposed to do. He was taking gifts, and the reason for those gifts were hopefully he was going to get pulled to a certain team, right? Something like that. And so he got caught. And what I found interesting is that article, I didn't know half of what I read, but what I did read was that he was trying to spin a whole bunch of baloney to say that what I said over here wasn't quite true, but, you know, it was because of this or because of that that I said that, and now what I'm saying over here is this. And I read it, and I'm like, you're still telling a lie. You're still not being honest. You still have not told the truth. And yet, this was something that was national news. Now, he came out and told the truth, and as I read the article, I'm like, he didn't tell the truth. Who's spinning this? Last weekend, while we were in New York City, on Saturday morning, Phyllis and I had been in Manhattan Friday afternoon, and Saturday morning it popped up on my phone that Jeffrey Epstein had just committed suicide. A billionaire. His morality caught up with him. Lack of morality caught up with him. He's 66 years old, facing 45 years in prison, and this time it didn't look like his money was going to help him. He took the wrong way out because now it's permanent. I believe that integrity will make a difference in the way that I conduct my activities. So the question again is, what is integrity? You've had a little time to think about it. What is integrity? How would you describe integrity? It is kind of hard to describe. So, to do right no matter what the cost. That is pretty much it. There's three parts to this, that, and this morning we're going to look at two of them. And the first one is, what is integrity? The second one, why is integrity important? And the third one is, how do we maintain our integrity? In the last couple months, there's been a lot of conversation about behavior. And a lot of it has been true. Some of it's been false. Last Saturday evening, Phyllis and I sat and listened to some friends of ours describe a situation that is happening in immoral behavior and is now being accused of a lot more by one person who's not even involved in the situation. And the thing is that the law is even saying there's nobody coming forward. There's no proof. But yet there's someone that's able. So when I use one side of integrity and say that morally we need to be people of integrity, there's also this idea of now it has become cool to accuse somebody of things that are not even true or you have no basis. And that's just as wrong as being immoral. So we need to be careful with that. So the thing that we want to look at this morning is what is integrity and why is integrity important? Next Sunday we will look at how do we maintain our integrity. So what is integrity? The definition of integrity is there's three actual definitions that are given in the dictionary. A firm adherence to a code of especially moral or artistic values. In other words, incorruptible. Something that is incorruptible. A person or persons whose values mean enough to them that they are incorruptible. The second definition is an unimpaired condition or sound. A definition of that would be this morning, I believe that the integrity of this platform is sound. I'm not going to fall through. I hope not. So that is another definition of integrity. The third one is the quality or state of being complete or undivided. Complete. What I found interesting is the synonyms for integrity actually are words that give a little better definition. Character is the first one. A person of character. Decency, goodness, honesty, morality. I don't even know what that word is. Rectitude, probity, righteousness, rightness, uprightness, virtue, or virtuous. Those are all words that describe integrity. So integrity, I would say, is an adherence to moral and ethical principles, soundness of moral character, a person who's honest. And when I look at that, a person who is honest is someone who is the same at home as they are at work and that they are at church or wherever they are. It is a person who is consistent. A person who understands the value of integrity. We're fixing to get in trouble here. Well, no, we're not. Okay. I thought I had an extra slide in here that was a duplicate. So I'd like to go to Genesis 39 this morning for our text. And I'm going to read the whole chapter. And I actually, one of the reasons I wanted to use the PowerPoint this morning is there's a lot of scripture that we're going to look at. But I do want you to turn to Genesis 39. The others, I will put them on the wall. Because I believe they're all important and I want to read them. But I want to look at the life of Joseph this morning, and I want to just look at one part of it. But what I want us to think about is something happened in Joseph's life that caused him to be able to respond properly in this situation. This is not something that all of a sudden Joseph decided, I'm not going to do this. Somewhere earlier, Joseph had made up his mind that he was going to be a person of integrity. He was going to be an honest person who lived what he said he was. And this is a story of Joseph and Potiphar's wife. And We all know the story, but I am going to read it because I think it's good for us to hear, good for me to hear. It reminds me of things in the story that I forget if I just try to tell it. So I'm going to read starting at verse 1. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, brought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So he left in Joseph's care everything he had. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Now Joseph was well built and handsome, and after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." But he refused. "With me in charge," he told her, "my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. One day he went into the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants was inside. She caught him by his cloak and said, "Come to bed with me," but he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. When she saw that he had left his cloak in her hand and had run out of the house, she called her household servants. "Look," she said to them, "this Hebrew has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed. When he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." She kept his cloak beside her until his master came home. Then she told him this story. "That Hebrew slave you brought us came to me to make sport of me. But as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." When his master heard the story, his wife told him, saying, "This is how your slave treated me." He burned with anger. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in the prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those who held in the prison. And he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. So the story is that Joseph was sold into slavery at 13 years old. And actually, no, he was sold into slavery at 17 years old. I'm sorry. And this is approximately 2 years. I'm getting ahead of my notes here. He was approximately in Potiphar's house for 10 years. I'm sorry. So about 10 years' time here from the time Joseph was sold into slavery until this incident. And it was about 2 years after that that he was then rescued from prison. And so there's a couple things here that I want to look at in verse 2 and 3. It says, "The Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man. He was in the house of his Egyptian master. His master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. He made him the overseer." And it says, "From the time he made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in house and field." My slides are messing up on me here, so somehow it's getting different. So God blessed Potiphar because of Joseph. So why was he still a slave? There's a lot of things here that I just, as I thought of this, I haven't got answers for them, okay? But then in verse 7, it gets really interesting in that Joseph has been living his life with integrity, and he has been refusing Potiphar's wife's advances. And in verse 7, it changes. And he said, I've been given power over everything that my master owns except you. But what I see as his answer is, I'm not sinning against my master, but I'm sinning against God. In verse 9, he says, how then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? One writer said this. Two things that happened in this story that Joseph did. Number one, he left his coat or his cloak, whatever it was, he left it right there. What did that do? It made him look guilty. If he'd have grabbed it and left, she would have had no evidence, but he left his coat right there. It also doesn't tell us how long it was from the time until Potiphar came home. Potiphar was a man who traveled a lot from the history. And so there is the thought that it could have been quite a while. And then if you look in verse 19, it says Potiphar was angry. Who was he angry at? I wonder if he wasn't angry at his wife because he knew that this probably wasn't true. And yet, what's he going to do? So there's a reason that I bring that in there, because if you think about it, Joseph was a slave. He's being accused of rape. And the law at that time allowed Potiphar to take him out and kill him. But he didn't. I think Potiphar knew that Joseph wasn't guilty. And he was in a hard place. So now Joseph ends up in prison. And we ask the question, how can that be part of God's plan? Joseph just did what was right, and he ends up in prison. Jeremiah 18:4 says, the vessel he was making of clay was spoiled in the potter's hand, and he reworked it into another vessel as it seemed good to the potter to do. And the way I understand that verse is that the potter was making something, and he realized that it wasn't what he wanted, and so he put it back in a pile of clay, and he redid it. And I believe that God does allow these things to happen in our lives, the bad things. The question is, how does a good God let these bad things happen? How, you know, like the question I asked this morning, was Jericho really that bad that they couldn't do a bypass around Jericho? It was less than 8 acres. It wasn't that big. But God had given them a command. There was something God was doing to teach them something. And sometimes God has to allow things to happen to me that shape me into what He wants me to be. And they're not always fun. They're not always good. Sometimes I make choices that causes God to say, wait a minute, bud, back up, redo this. You didn't do it right. You need this lesson again. And so I have to do it again. Job, another man who God made it very clear that Job was important to him. And he actually was bragging to Satan, and he told Satan, he said, you can't do anything that'll cause Job to curse me. And Satan said, give me a shot at it. And Job proved God right. Job 27, verses 1 through 6. Job was confronted with the opportunity to compromise his integrity here. And this is his response. Job took up again the discourse and said, as God lives, who has taken away my right and the Almighty who has made my soul bitter? As long as my breath is in me and the Spirit of God is in my nostrils, my lips will not speak falsehood and my tongue will not utter deceit. Far be it from me to say that you are right till I die. I will not put away my integrity from me. I will hold fast my righteousness and not let it go. My heart does not reproach me for any of my days. And then in Job 31, verses 5 through 8, he says, if I have walked with falsehood and my foot has hastened to deceit, let me be weighed in a just balance and let God know my integrity. If my step has turned aside from the way and my heart has gone after my eyes, or if any spot has stuck to my hands, then let me sow and another eat, and let what grows for me be rooted out. Let God know my integrity. Proverbs 14:23 says, the wicked is overthrown through his evil doing, but the righteous finds refuge in his death. Psalm 37:37 says, mark the blameless and behold the upright, for there is a future for the man of peace. The New Living Translation says it this way: take note of the one who has integrity. Observe the godly, for the one who promotes peace has a future. In other words, pay attention to what the righteous do and pattern your life after that. Job 2, verse 3. And the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man who fears God and turns away from evil? He still holds fast to his integrity, although you incited me against him to destroy him without reason. He holds fast to his integrity. He had just lost everything, and yet he was holding fast to that integrity. Proverbs 13:6. Righteousness guards the person of integrity, but wickedness overthrows the sinner. Let's look at Daniel chapter 6 for a minute. And I want to read this as well. It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom, with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now Daniel distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. At this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Finally, these men said, we will never find any basis for charges against this man Daniel unless it has something to do with the law of his God. Verse 4, they could find absolutely no corruption in Daniel. Their response was, we'll never find any basis for charges. He was a man of integrity. He had made choices that brought him to this point, and he followed them. So what is integrity? One person described it this way: it's like a loaf of bologna. No matter where you slice it, you get the same thing. Now, if you like bologna, that's good. If you don't like bologna, this, you know, so that's up to you. But it's like a loaf of bologna. When you cut it, you know what you got. It's the same thing no matter where you cut it. Integrity is defined as adherence to moral and ethical principles, soundness of moral character, honesty. Joseph's response could be seen as a little bit arrogant. No one is greater in this house than I am. But how could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? Potiphar trusted Joseph because of Joseph's integrity. God honored that in more ways than one. Not just here, but in the rest of the story, God honored Joseph's integrity, and he placed him in a position just under Pharaoh. And C.S. Lewis said, integrity is doing the right thing even when no one is watching. So why is integrity important? That's the second question. Why is integrity important? I'm going to read some things here that I have. Some of these came from a couple different websites that I actually looked at as I studied this. But some things that are very good, and these people were actually coming at it from a business angle as much as a spiritual. When I read into that, I was reading it, and I'm like, boy, this sounds like it could be a Bible study. And as I looked into them, they were actually businesses that were conducting business as an organization that had Christian standards. Someone with integrity conducts themselves with the same high ethical standards no matter where they are or who they are with. Someone with integrity lives a consistently principled life no matter what. When we live our lives with integrity, it means we are always honest. We let our actions speak for who we are, what we believe in. Integrity is a choice that we make, and it's a choice we must keep making every moment of our lives. There are several reasons why integrity is so important. First, living a life of integrity means that we never have to spend time or energy questioning ourselves. When we listen to our hearts and do the right thing, life becomes simple. Our life and our actions are open for everyone to see, and we don't have to worry about hiding anything. When we have integrity, we gain the trust of our leaders, our colleagues, and our team. We're dependable, and when we hold ourselves accountable for our actions, we become role models for others to follow. All of this, in turn, directly impacts our success in life. People who live and work with integrity are more likely to be considered for promotions. Why? Because integrity is a hallmark of ethical leadership. Organizations want leaders they can trust, and when you demonstrate integrity, you show everyone that you can be trusted. So there's three points that I have for this. Why is integrity important? Because integrity builds trust. When I know that I can trust someone, it increases my confidence that they're going to do what they're asked to do, or they're going to do what they say they're going to do. The second one is integrity defines your character. Remember, in those synonyms, the very first one was character. Integrity doesn't just happen on its own. My character determines my integrity. So integrity defines your character. No matter what you do to me, doesn't define my character. It doesn't define my person or who I am. It is my own choice as to how that is going to be lived out. The third one is a person who lives with integrity can be depended on to do what they say they're going to do no matter what the consequences. Joseph knew when he left his coat there, he knew what those consequences were most likely going to be. And the first consequence that he knew was death. But God spared his life for another reason. In conclusion, people with integrity are more concerned about their character than they are their reputation. Your reputation is merely who others think you are, but character is who you really are. Sometimes in life we face things we don't understand. I have a feeling that Joseph was actually questioning some things after that decision. But I don't believe that he ever questioned what he did. Life sometimes doesn't make sense. As Christians, we must understand that being men and women of integrity will not always make us popular. It is not always the easy way, but it is the right way. Sometimes I will make choices to make sure that I can maintain my integrity. That will not make sense. But I believe with all my heart that if I fail to do what Joseph and Job and Daniel did and set ahead what my decisions are going to be, I will fail if I don't do that. And unlike Joseph, I will have failed the test. Do I think you're going to respond perfectly to all situations? No. Recently, I was reminded of something a statement that I made just very recently where the premise of what I said was totally true. There was one fact that was not quite. And I can't go back and fix it. I can't. I mean, I've looked at it. I've like, and it bothered me. It still bothers me a little bit. I would, you know, I want to be seen as a person that tells the truth. And I've thought about that a lot this week as I studied this. And, you know, we're going to make mistakes. That's just the bottom line. We're going to missay things sometimes, and sometimes we can't go back and fix it. But I want to be known as a person that tells the truth. I want to be known as the person that when I tell you something, you can depend on it. I want to be known as a person who, when I am here, you see exactly who I am at home. And that's not always the case. But that is my goal. That is all of our goal. That should be all of our goals as believers. So how do I do that? Job said this, I will not put my integrity away from me. I will be a person of integrity. I will be honest. I will be a person who strives to follow God. Next Sunday, we want to look at how do we maintain that integrity? How do we be people of integrity? How do we do that and do it in the proper way? And we just want to let God work the rest as He shows us that. Calvin, do you have a song? 654 in the Faith and Praise. You can stand. Father, this morning we are just grateful again for the examples in Your Word. And I pray that as we strain to live lives of integrity, that You would continue to show us, continue to give us direction in our lives. Father, convict us when we're wrong and help us to make the changes that are needed. To be honest, to admit when we make mistakes, and to change the things that need to be changed. Help us to be fathers who are the same at home as we are in public. Help us to be husbands who treat our wives with integrity. Help us to be wives that treat our families with integrity. And help us to be careful, to be honest, to be fair, but most of all, to lay our lives out before You and to live our lives in a way that is pleasing to You. We ask that You would go with us this week. Father, we will be faced with choices and decisions that sometimes will be difficult to make. But God, You will give us the strength. You will give us the power to do that and to do it with integrity. Thank You for all You do and for giving us leading and direction. And we want to walk in Your way and be an example to those we work with each day. In Jesus' name, amen.
I was not thinking of taking out a trying to 370.